And let me apologize. We had some differences in understanding as to whether this meeting was called for 9:50 or for 10 a.m. But we're here now. I'm Steve Crocker, chair of the ICANN board. This is a meeting between the CCNSO ICANN board. Leslie Cowley, Byron Holland, Hirohata to my left, Krista Spain. We might, if Mike Silber comes, we'll ask him to come up here too, the CCNSO appointees to the ICANN board. In my view, the main benefit of session like this is to give the board an opportunity to hear in a unvarnished and sort of undiluted form the main things that are on your minds. We have a set of topics that have been suggested from both sides for discussion. I'll just read these through quickly and then turn things over to Leslie to manage the and orchestrate the entire session and integrate and choose a path through these topics as appropriate. Topics that we received suggested from CCNSO, conflict of interest rules, post-board membership, ICANN finances, follow-up the Singapore meeting, including current status of new financial system and view of board on the breakdown of those, and board operations, what has and will change in the near future. Some topics that occurred to us are views of the CCNSO on the Jazz report, progress on the framework of interpretation, including request for board liaison, CEO search, what qualities do you think we ought to be seeking in a new CEO? And ethics guidelines, what are your top three concerns and proposals to address them? With that, let me turn things over to Leslie.
Okay, thank you, Steve, and good morning, everybody. So if we make a start on the CCNSO questions, those of you that were listening will notice we have some questions in common, so I'm gonna put them together as a general topic. But for a starter, those that were with us in Singapore will remember a very keen interest from the CCNSO in all things financial. And so our first subject really follows on from our Singapore conversations regarding the ICANN budget, the status with the CFO appointment, which was vacant at that time. And I'd like to ask Byron to lead off on that one.
Thanks very much, Leslie, and welcome to you all this morning. I think in terms of following on, the CCNSO has been doing quite a bit of work, as many of you I'm sure know, in financial, strategic, and operational related analysis and review of the ICANN plan. As I'm sure most of you have seen, we've contributed to all of the stages along the way. There are two key working groups focused on those activities. One is the Strategic and Operational Planning Committee, which has submitted a lot of work in terms of feedback on the Strat and Ops plan and the budget framework overall. That's chaired by Roloff Meyer. And I chair the Finance Working Group, and that's the working group that's focused on looking at contribution methodology and contribution amounts for the CCNSO community in general into ICANN. It's certainly been a topic of discussion over the last number of ICANN meetings and the intervening periods. And as a result, we're taking another good close look at it. I think the last time we did it was in Wellington a number of years ago. That has a couple of tracks. One of those tracks is looking at the different types of models, not making the assumption that the current one we have today is the right one for all time, but looking at a number of different methodologies. In fact, we've reviewed 9 possible funding methodologies, including the one that is currently in use. Part of the reason we're doing that is to make sure that we're going to select the most appropriate one that deals with the widest range of CC operators. You have to bear in mind that we are not a homogeneous community. There is a significant range in terms of how CCs operate, governance structure, in a sense, who really, in a sense, owns them. So it has to, whatever model is selected, has to deal with a very wide range of structures. And as a result, we've done quite a thorough analysis that we've, in fact, just moments before this meeting, presented to the CC community for the first time. And between here and the next ICANN meeting, we'll be seeking their input and feedback on helping us whittle down from 9 possible models to the most appropriate 1 or 2 for really in-depth analysis. That's one track. The other track is the money. What is ICANN suggesting that the CC community costs ICANN? And really trying to get an understanding of that so we can apply those numbers over top of the model to make sure we find the most appropriate one, both from a fairness in terms of contribution perspective, as well as an appropriateness from a variety of CC structures perspective. You know, I'd say that's a bit of a good news, bad news story. And I've talked to a couple board members along the way. Good news is, you seem to have made a great hire in the CFO position. I've had the benefit and opportunity to speak to Xavier a couple times at some length. And it's very encouraging. So kudos to the board for having made a pick like that. Bad news, of course, is he's a new guy. And as I'm sure you're well aware, he has a significant number of priorities, of which our issue is but one of many. He's getting used to the team, the technology, the processes, the environment. And as a result, the detail that we as the CC community need in order to really do the appropriate analysis for all of us is yet to be forthcoming. And we've had some good discussions about that. We're assured it will be coming over time, but it is going to take a bit of time for Xavier and team to produce the kind of detail that is going to be required in order to do an appropriate analysis and for all of us to get a clear understanding of what the CC community costs ICANN, which we all want to know. So that is a bit of an update on where we're at. We're certainly encouraged. We as a CC community are well down the path in doing this work, but we may find ourselves having a bit of a brief respite while we let Xavier get his feet underneath him.
Thank you, Byron. So that was a bit more of a status update than a question, as you may have noticed. So from the CCNSO perspective, that's where our work is. And I suspect that we may need to pause slightly while the new CFO gets on board and deals with his challenges. So an update on that and the timescales that the board is envisaging for that work would be helpful.
Thank you, Leslie, and thank you very much, Byron. There's two or three points that I want to respond. But first of all, Xavier, would you stand up? And this is Xavier Calvez, our new CFO. He is, from my point of view, there's no good news and bad news. It's all good news. And most particularly, we've had the benefit of having not only he's had conversations with your group and with other groups, but we've had some very pointed conversations within the board with him. We've been very, very conscious for a long time about the need for being able to understand the budget in much greater detail. Understand where the money goes, how it's divided up, and be able to present it in much stronger ways. We have been in the process of greatly improving our financial systems, the mechanical systems that support us. But far more important than the mechanics and, you know, which data processing systems, if you will, to use an old term, is understanding the models and understanding the needs. And one of the elements of that is making sure that we understand the needs of the communities that we're trying to serve. And so, stealing some of your lines, Xavier, your presence here and your engagement with the community is a very definite part of the process. It's not just crunching the numbers, but it's understanding what crunching needs to be done and how to make that helpful. I have a bit more to say, and I know Shireen wants to say something, but let me ask if you want to say a few words.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Steve, for this eloquent introduction. I'm very happy to be here. I'm 6 weeks into the job, but part of my job, to Steve's point, is, in my view, is definitely to better understand the community needs, the community of the organization, generally speaking, and in order to be able to do a better job at structuring the finance infrastructure of ICANN, so that the service to the community is improved. As Byron explained, the changes required will take time to be designed, to be implemented, and to take effect from a structural standpoint. I think the added challenge, which is also an added agenda item for me, is to make sure that while we are carrying out structural improvements to the way we work in finance, we also need to make short-term progresses and pick low-hanging fruits and try to make progress on those in parallel. So this is where the challenge is. Now, having said that, based on what I've heard, if I had any expectation that finance would get unnoticed in ICANN, I would be deceived. So what I'm very happy about is that we have an engaged community to work with. Leslie, Byron, and Roloff have made themselves available to me to provide feedback and listen to me as well. So it's been extremely helpful. I'm trying to do the same thing with all the constituencies to be able to gather as wide and documented feedback as possible as to what the community effectively needs. And it will be an ongoing process. I'm just at the beginning of it today, but looking forward to make that a permanent approach and deepen my knowledge and relationships with the community in order to, at the end of the day, just have a better customer service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Let me offer up two thoughts. I've been watching the budget process for a long time and listening to some of the dialogue about how do we find out what the actual costs are and what portion of those costs are attributable to the CC community and other communities. And let me also say that I speak with the experience of having chaired a smaller but parallel organization, the Security Stability Advisory Committee, and having tried very hard to put together a budget and understand how that fits into the budget process inside of ICANN, and with the embarrassment of also having sat on the Finance Committee, and with those two fairly powerful vantage points still not being able to figure it out and get the pieces connected. So I share the frustration. I understand very well what the issues are. So that said, I want to offer up two things. The idea of let's parse this budget, let's find out where all the expenses are so we can find out which portion of it is ours, is sort of the way the message comes across, comes across with the sort of the implicit concern of, well, just the portions which are directly attributable that we can see are the ones that we think are appropriate for us to pay for might be the next portion of that message. The cost of running ICANN is, in aggregate, a number that you can see every year, and the devil is in the details about all the parts that have to be fit together. The cost of these meetings, the cost of lots and lots of communications and so forth. This is an adult enterprise, and all of us and all of you are mature people. One has to understand that you don't get to say, well, I only want to pay for this portion because that's the only thing I think is important. There's a shared set of costs that have to be covered in some fashion. We can have the debates about whether or not the appropriate amounts of money are being spent in one area or another. We can have the debates about whether or not we have too much overhead, about salary structures, a whole set of debates that we can have. At the end of the day, whatever the answers are to those, we then have an expense profile that has to be covered. We have to divvy that up in some fashion, and we have to deal with it. And that is a shared enterprise that we're all part of. The other thing, which is an emerging thought, we had a breakfast this morning with former directors and had some very interesting dialogue. And one of the thoughts that was pressed fairly hard was the observation that the vast bulk of the revenue for ICANN comes from the registries and the registrars, the G community. And like it or not, no matter how hard we try to keep things neutral with respect and have all of the stakeholders have strong input, there is a substantial undercurrent of the control that comes from money and the difficulty of pushing against that current. So there is a self-interest that I would offer to you in having a noticeable fraction of the total ICANN budget come from the CC community in helping to balance the set of interests. And that may be somewhat different from simply asking how much does it cost for ICANN to deliver the visible services to you that you see. I'll just leave that hanging in the air. That's just an observation from a dialogue this morning. It's not a conclusion. It's not a policy statement. It's not a demand. But it is, I think, something helpful to chew on. Shireen, you had your hand up first, and then Erica, and then, yeah, go.
Steve, I'm not going to repeat any of the things you just said, so point well taken. So I just wanted to say, I think thank you to both Leslie, Byron, and I suppose Roloff for coming in this morning and being understanding. Because, I mean, it's so easy. You know that our systems cannot provide the information you have, and you could have come this morning and pressed the button very, very hard. So I do understand. I do understand. I appreciate giving Xavier the time to settle in and get the systems on board. Having said that, I think what we don't want to do is come in January and find ourselves in a very frustrated situations where we did not understand each other. So I think that engagement that we started with Xavier has started and you with us, we want to continue that on an ongoing basis until the framework is posted. And we all feel that we've done our best. And I know that not all requests are going to be met, but I think if we engage very heavily, I think we will reach a good relationship and a good understanding. After all, we're all on the same side. I mean, there's no point not doing that. Second point, I really appreciate Xavier being on board. We have only one issue with him, is how to pronounce his name. Some people call him Xavier, some people call him Xavier, and we need to settle on a name. Maybe Savior is the best thing. Anyway, so thank you guys for being understanding, and I think we need to understand each other, and that's good.
Thanks. I should have a say in that, I think. So if we really want to make it simple, everybody can call me X and I'll respond.
Shireen, if I can briefly respond and to yours and Steve's comments, I think the intention of the CCNSO has always been to have an informed dialogue, and that's exactly what we're working towards.
And maybe just following up on that, I know Steve actually left us with some grist for the mill from a personal perspective. Is there a board position or overall outlook on what the CCs should be contributing? Is it simply cost? I mean, Steve left us with a personal thought.
I don't have to seek coordination or advice because I just know that we haven't gotten there yet. So we're as eager for this dialogue as you are. Erica? Yeah,
not on this point, but just a point of information. What we are doing, I chair the audit committee, so, and what Rita already started was to establish concrete standards and understand the methodology, the way we audit, from the ICANN point of view, our operation. And we will continue this. We will go even a little bit deeper now. We are in the process of looking into the international standards which exist. Of course, we cannot take them over completely because, let's be frank, we are more a hybrid organization. So it's not that we can simply take over, take, for example, Sarbanes-Oxley standards and just adopt them to our organization. That's not going to work. But there's certain methodologies and systems and standards embedded which are nicely, which will work nicely for us. And the same is true for many other standards. So that's what we are doing right now. So we will have a clearer understanding, you know, long before is the various goals which we have in mind will be transformed into the financial budget. We have a clearer understanding what really and how it should be done. And of course, it would be great, as soon as we have a better understanding. I'm sure we will do this to have an exchange with you about this as well.
Thank you. Let me call on Chris, and then we'll close off this topic and move on.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. I'll be very quick. I just wanted to caution against, there's a tendency to characterize the CCTLDs or the CCNSOs continual asking for numbers as a trick or an attempt to try and not pay a larger amount. It's not what you said, but you're talking about encouraging more money. I don't think there's any difficulty in the CC community embracing the fact that it probably needs to make a larger contribution to ICANN. The point is, we've got no idea, with my CC hat on, we have no idea what that should be.
Well, all right. Mike, quickly, please.
Thank you, and apologies for doing that. I just wanted to indicate the particular debate that's going on at the moment comes from a historical context and a historical construct of CCs paying fees according to the services they need and then voluntarily choosing to do additional things. And I think that we need to work and build on that and certainly give and deliver the information. At the same time, I know that many of my colleagues around the room have foundations, have various funding mechanisms to fund various initiatives. And I would like to see us moving beyond the current pay fees according to services received, but moving towards a construct where there are certain initiatives that ICANN is undertaking that may very well coincide absolutely perfectly with the foundations and with the initiatives in your CCs. And it may be that the CC community can take some of the heat off ICANN by looking at co-funding or co-sponsoring some of those activities rather than looking at a construct which says, well, now pay more than just the services you're receiving. And I think we need to move beyond that historical construct. It's important, but there's some additional things that we need to do because not everything that ICANN does is purely about delivering services. Some of it is actually good work.
Right off.
Here.
Rudolf Meyer from .nl. Mike, I think you have a very valid point, but there's a but, and that is if CCs or ACC wants to fund or partially fund another initiative by ICANN, it would still need the information about the cost of that initiative.
I'm not denying that, and that's why I'm saying the two go hand in hand.
I just wanted to clarify that, because it will still be the same question.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying trust us. Hopefully you do, but we need to move beyond that. We need to follow the construct, the historical construct of giving information. But I'm saying I think CCs also need to move beyond that historical construct of only paying based on absolutely to the cent the services that are received.
We're on the same page on that, Rolf. No equivocation on getting the information and being completely transparent and accessible and understandable about all that. Absolutely no difference in our positions.
Thank you. So there hasn't quite been an answer to the timeline, but with due respect to Mr. X, we'll leave you to work on your challenges and come back to us perhaps at the next meeting. You know, I can just confirm this is an area of interest to the CCNSO. It's an area of interest also because of its links to the strategic plan. So it's not purely about a what will CCs pay or not pay issue. And we do have a commitment to an informed dialogue, and I'd like that to be remembered. Jay.
Thank you. Jay Daly from .nz. One more important point, I think, here. .nz, like many registries, is a charity. Our profit goes towards social development of the internet. So the more that we need to pay ICANN, the less we can do of that.
Thank you, Jay. Sabine, this is going to have to be the last comment because we have two real hot topics to move on to. This is also a hot topic, yes. Yeah. We don't have any cold topics.
Yeah, Sabina from Dati. Actually, I want to make a point to Mike and also what Rolf is saying. I don't think that it was always the case in the good old days that we say we only pay for the service. But I think there was always a point we want to agree for what we pay. I think we were always at the point where we say, of course, ICANN is doing a lot of good stuff, but the question is always how much good, and there is plenty of good stuff I can imagine one can do, but up to some extent I think there was never a negotiation when we see what was allocated to CCTLDs about is that necessary or not, and how is the place where we can talk about on that. And I think that's another important issue, not about only to say that's allocated to CCTLD, but who defines what is done on behalf of CCTLDs. And I think that's another important point.
Thank you. Let's move on to our next hot topic, which is regarding conflicts of interest, stroke, revolving door policy. There's been much discussion within the CCNSO Council and within CCTLDs, whether members or otherwise, about recent developments in that area. We have noted the appointment by the board of some ethics consultants, and an update on where we are on that work and the timeline would be helpful, please.
I saw Bruce Tompkin, our vice chair. There we go. Bruce, can I ask you to take that on?
Okay. That's all right, look at the mic. Yeah, look, where we are on that is, first we give a more detailed report. I'm not quite sure when it is this week, but at some point this week there is a dedicated session on conflicts, and so we'll give a more detailed update on that. But, you know, the kind of 2 or 3 minute summary is that the Board Governance Committee has asked the staff to go and get some external advice, and they've got that advice from a couple of different sources, and that's reviewing both conflicts policy and seeing, you know, how that could be improved. And also looking to establish what we would call a best practice ethics policy. And so that's looking at ethics policies of other similar organisations, and then then I guess creating a draft, and then ultimately we would take public input on that. So that's in a potted summary. But I expect that we would have looking at updates to the conflicts policy and the establishment of an ethics policy in a time frame of months rather than years. But we'll try and give you some more information later this week.
Thank you, Bruce. So the question from the board to the CCNSO was, what are your top three concerns?
Actually, can I almost reverse the question slightly?
Okay.
How many CCTLD operators have an ethics policy? I mean, it would be interesting to be able to look at what's there in your community.
Or its equivalent.
Or its equivalent, yeah. So I've probably 10 or so. So, I mean, that would be a source to have a look, at least see what you already have, yeah.
Just in terms of timing, I know you say months, not years. Given that there are some material milestones coming up around the GTLD, not trying to pin you down to a date, but do you anticipate delivering in advance of some of those milestones? Does that make sense to put them before the launch and
operationalization? Well, it depends what you're defining as launch. So if you're defining of launch as, when would any vote happen on new GTLDs, when would any new GTLDs go live, that's really the end of next year. If you're talking about launch as in when can you submit an application, which is the 12th of January, I don't think something's going to be in place by the 12th of January. But the hope would be that, we'd certainly be putting mechanisms in place before there's any decision or making process that's happening at the board with respect to voting on a new GTLD. Yeah.
Just regard with to Bruce's question about which CCTLDs have a code of conduct. We have one, but I still think that in a sector where accountability, transparency, and self-regulations are carried as core values, I think that good governance and personal integrity is more than just doing what the code says you should do, or not doing what the code says you shouldn't. And things are happening which I think make it necessary to work on the code for ICANN. But regarding to your update, does it mean that the board has concluded that something went wrong and has to change?
Thank you very much for that question, Rolla. Can I stop now?
I was hoping for a yes, because then there's a subsequent question.
Yeah.
Can I? Maybe I'll just answer that question slightly differently. I think the way we look at it is ICANN is evolution as an organisation. So, it's growing, it's dealing with more material things. If you look at what happened in, and I'll let Ray comment as well, but if you look at our last meeting, we had calls from various members of the community. I think in the Singapore meeting, certainly the GNSO Council raised the topic of, where we're going to look at some of the aspects of conflicts policies and revolving door policies and et cetera. So there's certainly no one incident, if that's what you're trying to imply. I think we're hearing from the community and we're responding.
Just as an add-on, being a resident of the Board Governance Committee for some time now, this is not a new topic for the Board Governance Committee. We have undertaken changes over time. There are things that the board does now that it wasn't doing 1 or 2 years ago even. So this is an ongoing thing. It's not something that's new that just popped up the door. It's just that we're now doing a little bit more in some areas and so forth. So it's a continual concern of the board. I don't know if you're aware of it, but at every board meeting when we get ready to discuss an issue or to, more importantly, to take a vote, the first thing we do is the chairman queries every member of the board to have them volunteer whether or not they're conflicted. That is a practice that is well embedded to what we do. And those are the kinds of, but 2 years ago, we weren't really doing that. So those are the kinds of things that we are doing.
There was Shireen and then Mathieu.
A couple of things. One is developing policies. And I think all the effort going on at this moment is very good. I've been on many boards. It's always a big issue, conflict of interest, ethical standards. And I think the fact that we are raising it to such a level with such openness and transparency, to me, is very impressive what's happening there. But to make it work, really, the most important thing is adhering to these policy. And what typically happens with many boards is people come on board, they read the policy once, they sign a document, and then it stays in a drawer for the duration of their term, and nobody actually bothers to sit down, read, and refresh every year. Even though we sign pieces of paper to say we've read it every year, effectively, most people actually don't. They feel they know it. But in reality, the best thing to do is actually take the document, read it, and read it every year again, refresh yourself, and you'll find suddenly that the attitude, the standards, the awareness goes up very, very quickly. And I think it's something that we, the board, are conscious of, and it's something that we will strive to do as we go forward on that.
Thank you. My name is Mathieu Veil. I'm the CEO of AFNIC, manager of .fr. I have actually two questions on this issue. One is a question about what you are going to do now, because we, as was stressed earlier, there is one, a big pressure on ICANN to deliver on Essex because of accountability and transparency. And secondly, there is going to be a lot of pressure because of the developments of the new GTLDs. And my question regarding the timeline is, are you going to take measures before the policy is in place to protect or take conservative measures? That's my first question. And the second is, can you confirm that the policy will apply both to the board members and the staff?
Go ahead.
Thanks, Mathieu. And just to follow up on both of those questions, because they're very interlinked, I think the critical issue is to indicate that what we've learnt over the last few months, firstly with some of the staff changes and then with some of the board changes, is that as much as our conflicts of interest policy is, I think, very appropriate, very good, and certainly accords with California law, there are certain gaps within that that don't specifically take into account the realities of a multi-stakeholder environment where you actually want participants in the process sitting in governance bodies, where you actually elevate actors into leaders because they are from that community, and it's one of the dangers that we have in this community. So, personally, and speaking personally, I've seen no evidence of impropriety. Peter was appointed by this community. He's sitting in this community at the moment. If any of you have any serious doubts, go and ask him personally. But I've certainly personally seen no evidence of impropriety. What I have seen is an indication that we have a gap in our process and in our current very good conflicts of interest dealing with issues like revolving door, dealing with some of these other issues, both in terms of the board and the staff. So currently what we're doing is we're evaluating best practice, both with regard leadership and with regards employees, and specifically having regard to the fact that, for example, Bruce currently works for a registrar. We can't exactly turn around to him and say, well, when you leave the board, you've got to give up your current job. that would make no sense. But at the same time, given the specific vagaries of our organization, it still will be possible, having recognized those gaps, to put appropriate measures in place to deal with them. Whether we're going to try and rush things and put interim measures in place, we've hired consultants. I think they need to do their work. I think we need to see what results start coming out. I certainly think it's a useful question to raise, that if this is going to be a six-month exercise, it might be useful to put an interim measure in place. If it's going to be a one-month exercise, then hopefully there's no need for interim measures.
Thank you. Another part of your question was whether the measure would apply equally to board and staff.
I think the underlying principles would be the same. The implementation may have some differences because board members are not expected to have no other involvements. And as Mike said, in fact, that's one of the features, and we actually consider it to be a strength. But we also take it into account, and it's made very visible. Rod, would you like to say anything with respect to staff?
Sure. I think that the conflict of interest pressures on the organization are going to grow very significantly with the new GTLD program specifically. And I'm actually considerably more concerned about that than I think we need to continue to address ethics on all fronts. And as an example, we at the staff meeting on Sunday, we had a discussion about the conflicts of interest with respect to new GTLDs and how ICANN staff members should be careful at this event not to have individual conversations with any potential applicants who want to talk about their possible applications or their interests. Second, not to accept a drink or a lunch or a meal from anyone who is an applicant or might be an applicant. And this is becoming more challenging because even if you had thought traditionally that might just be in the GNSO, as you know, in this room now, some organizations here will be applying for new GTLDs. But I like the point that Mike raises. I think that the conflict of interest issue will be one of the most important tests of the multi-stakeholder model. And there's a fundamental dilemma that's present. The stakeholders are called stakeholders because they have stakes, and they're at the table. That brings their knowledge, that brings their expertise. That's why there's such good and sophisticated policymaking done by this organization, and that's why there's very effective coordination that's done. But the stakeholders have stakes and an economic interest. And how do you allow board members that have stakes to participate in some discussions, not participate in others, participate in some decisions, not participate in others? It's a really difficult thing. But I want to state that I think in general, it's one of the greatest challenges to focus on improving the practices on every front. Because once that list of strings gets published next May, that have been applied for by all the parties in the world who choose to submit an application, there's going to be very significant lobbying by some of those applicants to board members, et cetera, and we've really got to make sure that our processes continue to be tighter, both on the staff side, but also on the board side. So on the staff side, it's an issue of ongoing education and also making sure that we enforce the agreements that we have. So that education, again, is taking place this week. So please don't buy staff members any drinks or dinners. and help us contribute to all the right practices. Thank you.
So let me just say, we're going to move to Bertrand and Shireen, then we're going to close off this item because we've got the framework of interpretation and CEO search to end with.
Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. Just one distinction that is very important in this discussion, which is a distinction between conflict of interest and the so-called revolving door provisions. Conflict of interest dealing with the activities of board members while they're on the board is covered in a large part, is constantly refined and is going on. The question of revolving door policy, if any, is highlighted by what Mike Zilber was saying. One of the challenges that we have, and it's a problem for all of us, is to understand what is the relationship between the period when someone is on the board and afterwards, given that, as he gave the example, somebody who is on the board in the current system can perfectly be working in the industry, and the conflict of interest of policy applies, it would be completely irrational to consider that that same person should not be working in the industry in that position afterwards. So at minimum, the revolving door discussion must be distinguishing, as it is often the case in regulatory frameworks at the national level, about the type of activity that people can have afterwards. But I want to put, as a final point, a more general question, which is, should we collectively envisage to go further in terms of affirming the independence of board members and envisage that a rule could be that when people are serving on the board, they should be completely independent, And while they are on the board, not having a an activity in that sector, and have a revolving door policy afterwards. I'm putting the question very provocatively because there are logics in what people are doing. The more I can, as an element of regulatory function, the more the models that are used in regulators should be also taken into account. I'm not arguing that we should go that far, necessarily, but I think it is a fair question to ask, and we should all ask ourselves whether we are not comfortable, comfortable, and how much it changes or not the multi-stakeholder model.
I think also we have to take a practical approach here. The nature of boards and international boards is people come in and people leave. And you can't frankly restrict what people do after they leave. The most important thing is whilst on the board, they have to always make decisions in a non-conflicted manner. And if they're conflicted, they should not do it. They must always follow the ethical standard and do nothing that is really seen as non-ethical. And thirdly, they must never abuse confidential information, particularly when they leave the board and don't take it with them. But, you know, you cannot say to people after they leave the board, especially if their behavior was exemplary during the board and they've never done anything that caused them to be conflicting or unethical or non-confidential, you restrict what they do afterwards.
We have a very brief comment from Roloff, and then we're going to move on, please.
Yeah, mainly in reaction to Bernard's remarks. Although I'm not in favor of the existing model, and I would prefer the board members not to come from companies that are involved in the day-to-day business of the organization, I'm not overly worried with conflicts of interest between board members who run a registrar and are on the board. I think there's a fairly good procedure that makes it workable. I think we all know that we talk about revolving door aspects here, and I don't think that there are enough safeguards to ensure that the way it works now does not reduce the faith of stakeholders in the independence of the organization. And I'm not suggesting that there is improper behavior. There's no proof for that, and as long as there's no proof, I always assume that's not the case, but it's about the impression that the stakeholders get when certain things happen. And I think we should avoid that because faith of the stakeholders in the way this organization takes decisions is very important.
Thank you, Roloff. And last comment from Youngham. And while the mic is traveling there, I think this level of interest in this question demonstrates the CCNSO's interest in this area. It's good to hear that it's shared by the board.
Yes, youngomni.kr. I agree with most of the people in this room in saying that because ICANN is a multi-stakeholder model, that the board members will have things at stake. But with your example with Bruce Duncan and Peter, of course, I'm not suggesting there are any inappropriate behavior either, but the reason why people are not concerned about Bruce going back to where he was after he finishes and us being at least a bit concerned about the impression that that the current situation is giving us, I think says something about the need for certain standards and rules that the members of the board, even after they quit, even after they finish their term, that while while they were a member of the board, they had access to privileged information, and I think that's one of the key aspects of our concern. And as long as we can come up with a standard or a set of rules or best practices that outline what to do about the access to privileged information by the board, even after they finish their term, is would be one of the keys.
So let me just close with two things here. With respect to access to privileged information or confidential information, we have very strong rules in place that include consequences if they're violated, actionable consequences. So that's a relatively specific and, in our case, turns out to be relatively narrow. Almost all of the information that's interesting is public, and there's some internal personnel issues and so forth that are naturally confidential, but there's relatively less privileged information of the kind that one could benefit from than one might guess. But nonetheless, whatever there is strongly covered. Let me ask, we did a show of hands earlier, for those of you who would be willing to share, please forward your conflict of interest and your ethics policies. We'd be eager to see them and to learn from them. And if you want to go further and flag specific elements, we can do that. Am I putting you in an awkward situation, Bruce not only vice chair, but chairs the board governance committee, and this is falling in his lap to manage this whole process for us.
So we email Bruce. Sorry. Shall we email you, Bruce, with examples? Thank you. We'll circulate that on the council list. Thank you. Okay. Or to Bart, who will forward to Bruce, apparently. Okay. Right, okay. Thank you. Let's move on. So on the board list of questions to the CCNSO, there was the topic of the FOI working group, the Framework of Interpretation Working Group. In view of our time, can I just suggest that we provide you with a brief update via email? It's an ongoing working group. It will go on for quite some time, I suspect. The chair of the working group, Keith Davidson, is not able to be with us this week, but the vice chair, Becky Burr, is here and no doubt happy to answer any questions. If we could just draw the board's attention to two requests that we have made recently. Firstly, for a board liaison to that working group, and secondly, that the board reconsider the resolution regarding sponsorship agreements. And we're happy, I think, perhaps offline to take any board member questions on that issue.
Let me just say quickly, we care a great deal about this framework of interpretation. It's a major step forward in sorting out a lot of the issues, and so I just want to tell you that you got eager audience, and we can. With respect to the liaison, I think I bear some responsibility for the tardiness and the delay. The request came in, we circulated, we have some candidates, and it's, I apologize for not closing the loop. We'll take care of that within this week, and close that loop. On the last, I'm not sure I've got the full gist of the.
Can you understand what you meant by sponsorship? Because I didn't understand that. What board resolution do we have on sponsorship?
We could go on for hours on this particular subject alone. There's a request sent to Steve just the other week. Maybe it's best if we take that offline. We have a deep caring about this issue too.
Oh. Bruce, just so you know, it's not about sponsorship. It's about sponsorship agreements. They're referred to in the database as sponsorship agreements with CCTLDs. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, so my first question is this bound up with the framework of interpretation? But in any case, I think there's some coming up to speed in this. We'll take this on.
Thank you. So within our remaining 7 minutes or so, the board were asking the CCNSO for our inputs on the CEO search in terms of the qualities of the ideal CEO, how open and transparent that process might be, with both ensuring candidate privacy and board confidence. And in return, it was also on the CCNSO list of questions for the board in terms of an update and what the board plans were. So maybe we open that up to the floor. George.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie. I think you've summarized the issue very well. We had a meeting yesterday, 1.25 hours, in which I presented the board's current thinking on the requirements for an ideal CEO. We got a lot of good feedback from the community participating in that session. We are encouraging everyone who wishes to submit comments to the search committee. There are 8 of us, half of the voting members of the board on the committee. The board will be fully involved as much as possible in the search. We will be hiring an executive search firm to help us, but not to make the decision or to participate in the decision-making that we'll be doing. We've established an email address, CEOsearch2012, all one word, run together, no spaces, and we encourage people to help us by sending their opinions to us, and we will take all opinions submitted into account in our work. With respect to timeline, we hope to start a formal search sometime about the beginning of December, closing well in time to have the new CEO in place by July 1st. If we can go faster, we will. If we don't, if we need to go slower to do a thorough search and to do a good job, we'll do that also. I'll take questions, but it's a fairly straightforward process we're going through. I would say that we hope to keep the community informed to the extent possible, and we would like this search process to be transparent and well understood by the community.
Thank you, George. So the CCNSO, maybe not all of us were able to be at the session yesterday, were asked for inputs on qualities and openness and transparency of the process. Would anyone like to respond on that, please?
This is just a comment on transparency. I think that the process needs to be very clear and transparent with the milestones identified and what all the elements of the process are, which, you know, I would say seems to be going very well. That would be my comment thus far. But perhaps you could also think about highlighting the milestones along the way, whatever those markers may be, a long list, a short list, and letting people know what's happening. However, based on some of the comments I heard yesterday, I would strongly discourage transparency in naming names. I think that is seriously misguided, and I wouldn't want to out anybody here who might be contemplating the role, so I'll just say, if I was to apply, the last thing I would want my employer to know is that I was applying for another job. So, I mean, I think that piece is seriously misguided and would strongly recommend against it. In terms of perhaps elements that are important, you know, I think that the next CEO has to be a real strong organization builder and help take ICANN to the next level of maturity. So a real strong operational organizational person with excellent diplomatic skills, but not necessarily a diplomat. I think it has to be a real strong organization-related person.
Thank you for that comment. With respect to transparency, I personally would agree with you. When I chaired the NOMCOM, the principle was the process is totally public. The applicant data are totally confidential. The committee has been in existence for 10 days. So there are a lot of things I can't say because we haven't really come together on an opinion that I could express.
Lisa?
I'm Lisa from .dk. I'm just curious about, because when we hired Rod, we're establishing an office in Palo Alto. What's going to happen with this office, and is it expected to have a new office with the new CEO?
Thank you. So that's a question that's come up before. The office in Palo Alto has quite a few people in it who are very active and important members of the staff. There's no plans at all to change that. The question of opening new offices or the other side of that coin, which is the location of the CEO, is one of the key questions that the committee will take on. As George said, the committee is still in its earliest days and hasn't made any pronouncements, but that question has been certainly asked and will be answered very shortly.
Well, can I make a suggestion? Instead of people asking the question, and it came up twice yesterday, why don't people actually give their feedback as to what they believe? We believe a CEO should be based in Marina Del Rey. We believe a CEO should be based wherever the hell they want to be. Let's hear your feedback rather than people just asking questions. I think that would be the greatest utility to the search committee.
Good idea.
Did you want to come back on that, Lisa?
I'm sorry that I repeated the questions, but my concern is more that I just want ICANN to be a multi-representative, well, having office a lot of places. And I have a worry that you have two offices now in California. So actually that was also some of my reason for asking this question.
Apologies. I jumped on your question when it wasn't the same question as yesterday. I think the point is valid, and Steve's answered it.
Yes, please. I think it's, Mike, I agree with you totally. If you have an opinion about this, rather than asking the question, tell us what your opinion is. We'd like to hear it.
Okay, we're running out of time. Just one final question. Vika.
Thanks, Leslie. I'm Vika Mbisane from ZA, South Africa. Just one, maybe two questions that are interlinked to this. Understanding the norm with the senior leaders in organization, that when a CEO leaves, who has been with us for a little more than 2 years, I think for three, and brought in a number of senior appointments, what's the board's take? Is there a plan to manage any potential departure of senior appointments? Because in the today's corporate world, when a CEO comes with his team and he leaves, likely some people may leave with him. Is there a process to manage that potential departure of people? And joined to that also is the question about the ongoing senior appointments that we see being advertised at ICANN, and which really bothers the question from a senior management point of view. What's the wisdom behind the timing of some of these appointments? I see, for example, there was an ad for his vice president for Europe appointed, but then the news came up, no, declined eventually. And then there's a vice president for Africa, and again, it bothers the question, whose vision is it to come with this vice president approach? Is it the outgoing CEO? And if it is, why should we still follow it if he's about to leave? Because the next CEO may not like that approach. Thank you.
Okay, so I think that question was around senior staff appointments, particularly during the remainder of the CEO term, and senior staff turnover, I think.
Yep. Okay. So those are all quite natural and sensible and important questions. Let me break it into the two or three phases that you've talked about. The first thing is that Rod Beckstrom has brought in, as you say, a number of people. None of them, absolutely none of them, were part of his team beforehand or people that he'd worked for. One of the very strong things that that we can say about his tenure is that he's instituted quite strong recruiting processes that have had very detailed and in-depth search processes, set very high standards, And I know, because I've watched and observed this and worked with the people, a high degree of collegiality in building a team. So these are people who are committed to the organization and are not personal assistants, to put a very negative term on that, and so forth. Does that guarantee that every one of them will stay? That's a much bigger question and depends upon a lot of individual issues and so forth. But we're definitely not anticipating, and we have no indication that there's going to be some abrupt mass exodus. And we looked at dispassionately, every one of these people is a thinking, sensible, and committed person and has to earn a living. So they're not about to just blindly just make some arbitrary change just because the CEO is changing. It changes the environment. It may cause some thoughtfulness on their part. But they're all fully engaged in the work and committed to the organization. The next question of what is our hiring process for the open positions and how much is that tied to a strategy that is dependent upon our current CEO, and will that strategy change with the next CEO? That's an important and, as I say, a very good question. The board is in agreement with the strategy. This is not just a unilateral Rod Beckstrom's personal view. This is a strategic matter and has been socialized. We cannot stop everything we're doing. We have the benefit, and I think we are in a fortunate position, actually, to have a substantial period of time to go through a careful search process. That also means that this transition period, if you think of it that way, is a very lengthy period of time. We cannot just stop everything we're doing. We've got a complicated operation. We have a lot of obligations, and we have to fill key positions, and we have to continue on the path that we're on. So there's no simple coupling between the decision that Rod has made and our process of finding a replacement. That does not ripple down to stop the world and stop everything else. So, could there be some differences of opinion? Could there be some shifts in thinking? Absolutely. Are we anticipating anything, or do we know in advance what they are? No. And if they occur, we will deal with them, and we'll deal with them in a smooth and integrated way as opposed to abruptly. And that's as sensible as we know how to be in the current situation. And I don't think there's anything awkward about that, frankly.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for the session, which we need to draw to a close. For CCNSO attendees, can I remind you we are back in the amphitheater to discuss the strategic plan. But before that, we will have a coffee break for 10 minutes until 15:15. Thank you very much for everyone for this engagement.
Let me add my thanks, and let me also say that in these engagements that are scheduled, and the board is sort of scheduled to go one after another, we've been very interested, and I think this has been a very key example of substantive dialogue, not just pro forma, nice to see you, and so forth. We're very eager to get into issues that are meaningful. I think we have absolutely done that today. I think that's been very helpful, and we appreciate that very much.